Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to the Weekden Update, your weekly dose of everything Grizzlies, presented by the Grizzden Podcast and the Fans First Sports Network. I'm your host, Will Walker, and I'm joined every week by John Kraft. How's it going, John?
Happy to be here. Super pumped about having our first one in a while. And unfortunately, as normal with Weekden, the news is going to end up overtaking the rest of what we like to do.
So John and I have been talking for the last couple weeks what we wanted this particular podcast to look like throughout the season. You know, we plan every date, we plan the format, and I'll share that with you in just a few seconds. And this morning, the very first one, the inaugural episode where we're going to hit the ground running, we have just something so important that it's going to take over the episode. And we're going to get to that in just a second. But next week, hopefully, barring any other breaking news, we're going to start out with the record and rating of the Grizzlies. We're going to go who's up and who's down. So that's going to give us a chance to highlight something from last week and also lowlight something from last week. We're going to talk through a few news and notes and then the need to know for the upcoming week. So we're going to look at matchups. We're going to look for specific trends we're going to be watching for and anything special from a miscellaneous standpoint. We're going to crown an MVP of the week every week. And then every few episodes, we'll have a 10-game prediction. John, could you describe the reason why we do this 10-game prediction throughout the season?
Yeah, so the 10-game prediction I think is really important because in an 82-game season, it's very easy to get too high on the highs, but especially for Memphis Grizzlies fans and Memphians in general, low with the lows because of shot variance, because of just weird matchups and all these things. And so usually 10 games is a really good opportunity to kind of see the big picture. So when you have sort of like schedule losses or, like I said, crazy games where a team just shoots lights out, which happen, you don't get thrown by that. But you look over like, how are we playing over a 10 game sample size? And so you can kind of get a feel, because we might get destroyed by some random team, but then we went 7-3 over the last 10. And so those are the kind of things. And I think it's a helpful way to look at the seasons.
Yeah, for sure. And Kraft and I, of course, we're going to be, you know, there's going to be undercurrent of competition here. We're going to try to get the most accurate predictions against each other. But like you said, this is more of setting a threshold for expectation every 10 games, just kind of see, okay, who do we have coming up from the schedule? Are they a strong opponent, weak opponent? What's the schedule around each opponent? And also, injuries. It's going to be a really good way to go back and track. And that's what I'm excited for MVP of the week as well, is, you know, when we're 70 games in, we can look back and see, you know, Santi Aldama really popped for this, you know, 2 week stretch. And we'll hopefully we'll highlight that along the way with the MVP of the week. But we've done enough introduction. Mm-hmm. It's time to get to the somber news that we received this morning. About mid-morning, there was a tweet that was published by the Grizzlies PR account, and it read as follows. Grizzlies center Steven Adams will undergo season-ending surgery on his right posterior cruciate ligament, or PCL, after non-operative rehabilitation did not resolve ongoing knee instability. Adams is expected to make a full recovery ahead of next season. John, your first reaction reading this was?
This really sucks. And it's just kind of a damper as far as just this whole weekend. I mean, I'm getting excited. I'm looking and watching old Grizzlies games. I can't wait for Tuesday at the start of the season, but really Wednesday to get here. And just really excited to see what this new look Grizzlies are going to look like, as well as just being excited. You know, we played really well in our preseason game when our actual rotation players are in. And this just puts a damper, because you immediately feel like, oh, does this put a ceiling on the season? What does this mean? And just all the things that go through. And honestly, the biggest thing for me is just having missed Adams for the second half of last year. He's just a fun player, a fun personality, that it's just, I'm just sad, like, I'm not going to get to watch him play basketball this year. And so that was just, like, take away the team stuff. I was just sad that I'm not going to get to see Adams just do funny things, crazy passes, just wreck, you know, undersized big men. And so that just is really sad.
Yeah, I was in shock. And honestly, it's been a full day of processing, because we had seen him play in the preseason. It's not a situation to me where I was going in with any sort of pessimism. Of course, it was something to monitor. And now if you look back at the media day interviews, you know, you see Taylor, I feel like, was the most confident. Zach was middle of the road. Maybe it was switched around. But the point I'm trying to get to is Steven Adams seemed to be the least confident of everybody that was asked about his specific injury. And I thought, you know, maybe this is just Steven Adams being coy. He just is kind of a guy who seems to not take interviews too seriously, which is a lot of the reasons why we really love him, because he's really fun. But he, looking back, that's notable now to hear that, you know, he might have had been feeling a certain level of discomfort and was playing through it. And obviously, the first thing for me was this, my mind immediately went to mismanagement, which with this Grizzlies organization is not something my mind immediately goes to when I see something like this, because of course I think we are, you know, 10, 11 months from when this injury had happened. They've had this whole time to rehab, and I get that, you know, players would rather opt not to do surgery, and I'm sure teams would too. Needless to say, I'm not a doctor, but I'm wondering too, at what point in time along the way was this enabled? You know, how long were they going to keep doing this rehab? Because my guess is, I mean, if he started to say he was feeling better, I'm sure, I don't know if there was something, a re-aggravation. I know he didn't play on Friday. He looked pretty good in the minutes that he did play in preseason. It looked like he was moving around pretty normally. We haven't heard anything like this. It just, to me, felt like it really came out of the blue. I wonder if there was a second opinion that was being asked of the team. I'm sure there was a lot of internal conversation from January up to now, till now. But to me, it's just such a long time. I'm like, if you know you're going to potentially need a surgery that will put you out for 10 to 12 months, which is the timeline that they've released on this, if we're looking towards next season, I just don't know along the way, why not have this earlier and try to have him back for midseason? I just don't understand. And so that was my first reaction, was just shock at the news because of the fact that he had been playing in preseason, and then just almost a level of just anger. I'm like, what happened behind the scenes? And of course, we're never going to know unless somebody goes and potentially goes on the record with something. But
not likely with the Grizzlies.
Not likely with the Grizzlies. And so, yes, I mean, we can, you know, that's one element of this. But then the other element is on the floor. How crucial Steven Adams was to this team's success. We can argue how crucial he should be, but my opinion on the matter is you have your core three, and the front office has identified the need, which is Jaren Jackson is not a true five. I don't think he will be. He could be in closing lineups against favorable matchups. And but like that's what you've identified is you need a bruiser to take the load off and someone to rebound, which is not Jaren's primary skill. And also you want Jaren to be, feel free to roam. You don't want that pressure in the back of Jaren's mind that he has to take over the rebounding. And then you have the screening action with the guards that Adams was the best in the league at. And so what do you do now, Kraft? Like, where do you go from here if you're the front office? I have a list of some names I have ideas of, but like, let's talk big picture. Do number one, do we need to replace Adams? Mm-hmm. Number two, if we do, like, what's the best way to go about that?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, that's what's sad. I mean, I probably of a lot of the people I talk to, I'm, you know, not shockingly, I know to people, I'm not as pessimistic about the season as maybe some people were immediately, just because honestly, we played the second half of the season without him last year. And I just, for me, the sadness comes from it just, you know, big picture for the whole season, it gives you less flexibility for sure. It allows, you know, basically now we just, Jaren cannot get injured. I mean, like if Jaren gets injured, even misses 2 or 3 weeks, it's going to be really, really difficult, especially now with Clark out as well, because that's the other thing about this is that our two best big men outside of our core three are both probably gone for the season. You know, maybe a small, small shot with Clark that he comes back this year, but most people think it's not going to happen. And so that's the big deal is like now it's, we are really thin. We went from thinking forward position is where we're good and we're worried about our guards to now it's like, man, we feel really deep at guard and now we're super thin in the forward. So that's one area we got to think through. But yeah, so the big things that rebounding is really what Adams brought, a little bit of just basketball IQ with the offense and then the screens that he set, which just allowed guys to get so open. And it's been said often that Adams, it's not that he is an elite role player. And the big thing about Adams is he makes Jaren better, he makes Ja better, and he makes Bane better. Like all three of those players are better when they're playing with Steven Adams. And that's a huge loss. And I'll get to why I'm not as pessimistic later, but I do want to like sit in it for a minute before I always want to go straight to the, like, it's going to be okay and here's why, but we have to really sit in that. And so the biggest thing, big picture, that the front office has to think through is we have now Adams and Clark, both of whom have had massive surgeries. One who is now a center, you know, hitting 30, with now a couple knee surgeries in, obviously missed an entire year. We have Brandon Clark who's coming back from Achilles. And while every, you know, again, all the surgeries seem to be going well and everybody's super positive, just it is rare to see guys come back, especially people who, you know, athleticism and explosiveness is a major part of their game. And so the front office is going to really have to think, do we get some short-term help? And we'll talk about maybe that in a minute, how they can do that. Do we get short-term help to try to maximize this season, or do we make this season a laboratory, a little bit of how much can we play Jaren at the five? Do we need to start looking for who is going to be that fifth starter, you know, moving on from Adams and maybe even Clark? And we're just, those are the questions that we're going to have to answer, you know, and hopefully, you know, you were talking about Adams being negative, Jenkins being positive, and then Kleiman being in the middle. And I'm hoping that in the front office, this wasn't a massive surprise, that it's probably disappointing. They were probably hoping, but my hope is that they have that somewhere on a whiteboard, there's a lot of plans of, okay, if this goes the way it may go, you know, or the pessimistic, then here's what we're going to do, you know? So.
Yeah. I would say too, just to add on what you said and what my point was leading to earlier, Steven Adams, I think, is probably at his peak, is the perfect complement for what you need. However, more importantly, he's the archetype for the player that you really need in that role. And I'm not saying he's the only one in the league that can fill that role. So that is the encouraging part. You know, you had the guy in the building, and that's the sadness. It's like you have it here. It's just now you don't anymore this season. Right. And all of a sudden, there's the margin for error is just so much slimmer. Right. You were talking about Jaren's injury risk. Like, and the risk now is to, you know, the play style too. How much can you experiment in a regular season where, to me at least, you have to be, based on the fact that we didn't have Steven Adams in last year's playoffs and how much that was a struggle with the depth, I'm looking ahead to this playoffs and I'm like, I want as favorable of a matchup as possible. I don't want to be playing from behind, which we have tended to do anyway from a favorable seed. So I'm not saying like it guarantees anything, but this team has really been like it's been a regular season machine so far.
Right.
And I want that to continue. I don't want to lose momentum. In the back of my head, though, I am thinking if something were to happen, all of a sudden this year is no longer about the playoffs anymore. It's about like really figuring out who you have in the young guys. And, you know, it's about development, which is it doesn't align with the linear track that we've been going on. But we have to also take a step back potentially and remind ourselves of all the injuries that we sustained and the Clark one just combined. It's just there's a lot there. And but I think the optimistic side, again, is that Steven Adams is the archetype for a player, and those players are out there. We could probably find them.
Well, and to get nerdy, I want to get so for the listeners, I'm going to get nerdy for just a second, because one of the big things when it comes to analytics is a thing they call the four factors. And we talk about offensive and defense efficiency, and this kind of has to do with this, but we have four factors that people really look at, analytic people, and that is effective field goal percentage, which is basically just what kind of shots are you getting and are they going in, free throw rate percentage, which is how many free throws you're making, offensive rebound percentage, you know, or if you're on defense, keeping people from offensive rebound. So offensive rebound percentage and then turnover percentage. Well, one of the reasons why we've been a regular season monster and one of the reasons that Steven Adams is so amazing is the rebounding percentage is unbelievable. As in, Steven Adams is basically the number one offensive rebounder in the world, honestly, in the NBA. And so we really killed people on the boards when he was in there. We were a great team. We were just a great rebounding team. We've been great at turnover percentage. We were getting better at free throw rate. And obviously, so Steven Adams does not help with free throw rate. Steven Adams probably does not help that much with effective field goal percentage, except for us getting good shots off of offensive rebounds that he creates. So there's a little bit there. And the hope was with the Marcus Smart, Dylan Brooks trade-off and just a lot of internal development that our effective field goal percentage was going to be way better. Because if you look back the last 2 years, even though we've won a lot of games, been the two seed, that is just where we really struggle. And so what's going to have to happen now is we got to hope that we are going to have a better effective field goal percentage. We're going to have a better free throw rate. We're going to keep our great turnover percentage. But then the rebound is the big worry. Is both and honestly, the biggest worry is on the defensive side, because we are a top defense. But we are. It's amazing how good of a defense we are, because even with Adams playing half the season last year, we still did not have a great rebounding percentage. And so that's sort of can we be so, you know, can we be so amazing at hitting threes and so amazing at turning the ball over, turning other people over and not turning the ball over ourselves to make up for that, you know, the rebounding percentage we're going to lose with Adams. And that's kind of going to be the interesting question with who we look at and just how this season goes.
Yeah. And you also had Dylan Brooks contributing to the effective field goal percentage in a negative way. And so do you
like replace, one of the worst?
Yeah. Do you backfill that with somebody who can shoot? And then, you know, does your offense take a different complexion at that point? And how does that look affect the numbers?
Right. Because that's one thing. I mean, you know, it's funny because like Matt Hardlicka, who's someone who's been on the podcast before as a guest, and some other guys, they've always kind of been less enthused about Steven Adams and more wanting somebody who can shoot from that position and thinking ultimately we need jaw and four shooters.
Right.
And so there is a world in which, you know, now this makes us trade for a center who maybe doesn't rebound as well, but who actually spreads the floor and shoots threes. Obviously we've seen this with Tillman in preseason, which I don't expect Tillman to become amazing three-point shooter, but we've seen him shooting it. And so that is like one positive way I can see, hey, maybe through trades, through other things, we might bring in a big guy who stretches the floor. And while we give up some of that rebounding and some of, like you just said, a lot of the screens and a lot of things, but maybe our offense just takes off,
yeah,
you know, because of that.
And also, I mean, this is marginal, but is your need of offensive rebounding less when you have guys that are just better shooters? You know, so it's like that chicken or the egg situation.
I mean, it's funny because you look and, you know, one of the things I looked at cleaning the glass just to see, and it was interesting that, like, you had some great defenses who defended the boards really well in, like, Boston, Miami. I mean, all the Milwaukee, the typical. And we were actually the weirdos who had the top four defense that didn't rebound well from the defensive side. But then you also, you know, who was the best offensive rebounding percentage team? Houston. You know, like, and why is that? Because, you know, and they're really bad. It's because they miss all the time.
Right.
And so because they missed all the time, especially because they took a lot of bad shots, there's a lot of long, weird rebounds and other things like that. And so in that sense, those are the kind of things that give me a little bit of hope in that here's the opportunity for us to maybe try some different things, which honestly, we, you know, looking at last year, that was getting Luke Kennard shooting more threes. And we kind of shifted on the go last year. And so I think for us, as far as regular season, one of the things, like, I think now what happens is without Adams, I still think we're going to be a really good team. I think we're going to be fine. We can talk about that more in a minute. But I think what's sad is when we play the Lakers, when we play the Bucks, when we play these teams that have two big guys or just are big in general. It's going to be interesting, and it might mean that, like, when it gets down the road, obviously our team can look totally different by April, but it might mean that we're going to look at matchups more than seed potentially in the playoffs or things like that.
Totally.
'Cause, you know, I think that honestly, if, you know, those, we had two coin flip games against the Lakers, LeBron made that amazing shot, you know, but let's say he misses that shot and we go on, like, I don't think we would have missed Adams against the Warriors. You know, and I don't know. It'll be interesting. I'm at, you know, spoiler alert to our talk about the matchups. I'm interested to see what it's like with the Nuggets. I don't know about that. But I know that for, like, the Warriors in particular, like, we don't really need Adams in that matchup. You know, we saw with the T-Wolves, we didn't really need Adams. You know, of course, that was before they got Gobert. So who knows? But just those are the kind of things that will be interesting to watch as the season goes on. And I also just think that we have a smart front office who's going to adapt. We have a really great regular season coach. So,
yep. Let's talk about the mechanisms by which we can actually bring somebody on board. Bobby Marks had a tweet that he had earlier today. It said that the Grizzlies can file a disabled player exception request to the NBA for Adams. They have to accept that request, and then 50% of Adams' salary is what we get to use for that disabled player exception. And however, they do not provide an extra roster spot. So that's going to be an interesting problem to solve, honestly, because we do have a full roster. We've already used 3-2 ways, and they would have to open up something, and that begs the question, okay, there's two ways to open something up. The first way is you already have something temporary coming when Ja Morant's suspension. It's after 5 games, you get relief for, I think it's 20 games after that. Mm-hmm. And so you can sign a replacement player to that spot, but of course that only spans until Ja Morant is back from his suspension. So then after that, you would have to waive someone or make a trade, and that to open up a roster spot to then even use the disabled player exception. So the question becomes, okay, who on our roster at that point are you comfortable with waiving? And as of right now, the lowest man on the pecking order is Kenny Lofton Jr. Now, he happens to be a front court player that is now all of a sudden probably going to get backup minutes here at the 4 and the 5. And so you have Tillman, you have Jaren, you have Santi Aldama, and now you have Kenny Lofton. And those are theoretically your rotation right now at the 4 and 5 spot. And so can he prove enough through the first 25 games to then make the front office think, okay, either we don't have to waive him to create a roster spot, or we can find another way in which we can get a better player via trade. And maybe at that point you sacrifice a different player on your roster. Or, I mean, we can even talk about the prospect of, do you want Steven Adams or Brandon Clark on your roster at this point? Maybe we're playing well enough to where that's a real question, where you don't want that risk down the line. And you referred to that earlier. We also are 17.1 below the luxury tax, and we have the non-tech tax mid-level. We have a $7.5 million trade exception. We have the $4.5 million biannual exception. All that to say, we're not completely inflexible with our options. there's just, if we're going to talk trade, that opens up a lot more. But if you're looking just for more temporary help, there's a couple things we can do.
Right. Well, and I mean, at the end of the day, that's like, if a center right now is available, that probably means they're not that great.
Right.
And so that's one thing that is hard. I mean, you know, that's not to say, obviously, Grizzlies fans have known many a pickup, even guys, even like a Gilbert Arenas coming out, coming from the you know, like the Y, to actually play a decent role for us. So that it's not unheard of. I even saw some people throwing around Mark Gasol's name, which was hilarious to me, but which tugged the heartstrings. But it's not happening.
Not happening.
But part of that, you know, so my thought is, I think we're going to sign somebody, I think on the sixth game. And I think that becomes available November 2nd. And it looks like, you know, we had thought that would be a guard, like a point guard to kind of make up for Jaw. But now it almost certainly will be a big man. And that's the question. I think the question is going to be, do we play him or do we, you know, play Lofton Jr. more minutes and see what we got in him? I assume, just knowing the Grizzlies, they do not mind playing young players and they believe in development. And so, like you said, that's probably going to be the case. And then, you know, 25 games in, I think they will look at stuff. This whole time, they are probably looking at trades. But, you know, and I saw today on Twitter a bunch of names, and maybe we can throw some out there.
I have like 10 names.
Yeah, and so we can throw some out there. But I will just caution everybody with, the worst deal we would get would be right now, because everybody in the league knows we are looking for a center. And so the Grizzlies, we are probably going to play several games, I would expect. And we might grab a guy, you know, from off the waivers that's not on a team in after game five. But I would expect that if a trade's coming, it's going to be more December, January. In fact, if we're treading water, which I hope we are. I hope we're, you know, 500 or above 500 when Jaw comes back. We'll probably even wait and see what it looks like with him. And so I expect probably if a big move is coming, it's more likely closer to the trade deadline than closer to now. But I feel like on Twitter today, and everybody was like, oh, we've got to do something. I'm like, no, actually, I think it's probably going to be a little bit. And, you know, and if the Grizzlies have shown they believe in their depth chart, they believe in these young players. And I think this is probably they're looking at, well, now we have 25 games to see what we have in Lofton Jr. to, you know, and whether we need to waive him, whether he really does have a future. And I feel like that's probably the way they're going to go. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, who they come up with for that. I mean, almost certainly we're going to get somebody, on November 2nd, I think, to fill out that roster spot. So we'll see who that is. And maybe
I have four names.
Talk about that. Okay.
I have four names for the intermittent signing.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Bismack Biyombo, he's not on a roster yet. He's just, I mean, a vet who's can do a lot of the stuff that you need a garbage man to
would,
do.
That would be, for what this is, I think that's an A+.
Yeah, me too. Nerlens Noel is another one who's out there. Dwayne Dedmon is like a Xavier Tillman-esque player, just undersized, but has played center in certain lineups. And then I have one that is going to be familiar to a lot of Grizzlies fans, and that's Gorgui Dieng.
Yeah,
this front office has history with him. He's most recently played on the Spurs and was waived because the Spurs are, of course, going younger. But, I mean, he could – I still remember a couple games where he was stretching the floor in the corners.
Yeah.
He can rebound. He's service. You don't want him to be, like, part of your depth chart long term.
Right.
But he's a 20-game guy.
Yeah.
And so one of those four, I'd be fine. Probably Dwayne Dedmon would be the last one on the list. I want someone with some more size.
Well, and he just kind of, to me, just repeats what Tillman does.
Agreed.
I feel like you want, like, I like both the Biyombo and the Dieng in that, you know, Biyombo's not stretching the floor.
Right.
But he is crashing the boards, and he is setting really good screens. And mm-hmm. just, just being a physical menace, which I think repeats some of what we lose in Adams.
Right.
And then, like I said, with Ding, he does a little bit of the rebounding. He seems to screen pretty well, though. I remember the refs liking to call him for moving screens a lot, but he also, he would be that interesting mix of you kind of have to guard him. He stretches the floor a little bit. So I think all those would be good. I mean, honestly, I would, you know, as a fan at, as someone who likes short, like to win regular season games, I think I would, if we were able to get Biombo or Gorgie, or honestly, probably any of those four names, I think I would struggle with not playing them and playing Lofton, even though it's shown our front office does a good job of developing guys. So we'll see.
I have also a list of trade candidates, and this is from like least exciting to most exciting, in my opinion, in terms of their fit. And also, most exciting would be because I don't think this is as realistic, and these teams would probably command a higher price, but they're worth it. Mason Plumlee would be the first one on the list, kind of that lower level. He's up there in rebounding rate and yeah, just kind of does all the little things that you need a center
also is
to do.
He's a good free throw line passer, yeah, I think, too.
Agreed.
Like kind of the way Adams is.
Energy. Jericho Sims, currently third on the depth chart. I actually have Isaiah Hartenstein as well, who I've always loved.
And he is one of those guys that the analytics love.
Yes.
And so that I would keep an eye. I mean, for everybody talks about the Grizzlies being a spreadsheet team, he is definitely a guy who would be high on the spreadsheet.
For
so.
Sure. Clint Capella, I also have listed here as well. Who knows what the Hawks are going to do? You and I both took their over. So, I mean,
yeah,
Clint Capella and Trae Young just fit really well. I think there's an allegory there to Ja and Steven Adams. Obviously, I'd prefer Ja and Steve-O to Trae, yes, and Clint. But there's something there. Robert Williams is an interesting name because he got traded from the Celtics to the Portland Trailblazers. We're unsure of what the Trailblazers' direction is going to be right now. They already have DeAndre Ayton, and so how does that going to work? And right, he's injury-prone, of course, and yeah, we have enough injury-prone guys, but he's shown that at a very high level, like he and Jaren would be menacing to teams.
The two of them and Marcus Smart together, like that, yeah, we would, but I'll say, I mean, but he's the exact kind of candidate where I know I was seeing a lot of talk on Twitter about him today, and that's great, but he's exactly the kind of guy who we would get in January,
yes,
or closer to the trade deadline.
100%.
You know, after the Blazers have kind of given up on the season.
And they're trying to extract so much value from, right, their assets, is like, is that, are you going to win, quote unquote, that trade, or is it going to be,
right,
even?
You right, know, you don't and know. And is it worth it long term for us to start giving up our first round draft
100%.
Picks just for a guy who's fitting in for the Steven Adams role?
Right.
Like, I mean, that's the stuff we're gonna have to really. I mean, which will become clear, I think, as we see us play out in the regular season and what we look like.
Two more names: Ivica Zubac, who's on the Clippers. I just think like he's a perfect, knows his role. He's gonna be like, very important for the Clippers this season, and so I don't know. That's why he's lowered on the list. And then the last guy is Wendell Carter Jr. I just think like it's not happening with him, but he'd be the perfect complement to Jaren. Can do all the things well that Jaren has struggled with, but also he can shoot. He's just like the
I would make the argument Wendell Carter Jr. might be an upgrade over Steven Adams, which I know like Steven Adams stats might be coming out of Twitter to kill me for that. But as far as just him being younger, him being a 3-point shooter, and I think him doing a lot of the stuff. I mean, he is basically like, you know, Al Horford 2.0, I
right.
think. I mean, he
it's still
he,
really young.
And he's been a guy that a lot of Grizzlies fans and other people have looked at for a long time. But like you said, I don't know why the Magic on their timeline, you know, in a way, they're a year or two behind us maybe, but I would see them as thinking, oh, this is a guy we need to keep around for a long
time.
And
they have, like, you could tell by their draft that they're just trying to solve their guard problem. I think mm-hmm. they already are assuming Wendell Carter's the solve for their, you know, 4/5 problem.
Right.
Well, if it's going to be anything like the Grizzlies in the past, like, none of these names are probably going to get signed. It's going to be someone random that we've never heard of, and they're, you know, probably going to be really good, and
yeah,
we're going to start arguing. Exactly.
Yeah.
But it, if nothing else, this all of a sudden makes Kenny Lofton's next mm-hmm. 25 games the most interesting, you could argue, out of any player on the roster, because he's not only playing for, he's going to get more playing time than he expected. You know, we don't know that for sure, but I'm guessing he probably will. And also, those minutes are going to be way more important and high leverage for him mm-hmm. Because it could be his future in yeah. on the Grizzlies. So.
And it's, you know, it's interesting because we always look at Tillman. One of the things we loved about Tillman was, I mean, last year, even as a pretty veteran guy, went down to the G League to stay in shape. He was always ready, and he's been, you know, he's always come up big. I mean, we look at the stats, we think we definitely need an upgrade over Tillman when we get to playoffs if we really want to do something, and I agree with that. But I'm also just, you know, he hit the big shot to beat the Warriors in the play-in. He played great minutes for us against the Lakers. Like, he's been stable, and I look at, you know, Lofton Jr. and him coming in a little overweight in training camps and people talking about it. I know it became probably a bigger deal than it really should have been, but that's just the worry, because this is why you stay ready. And I wish, you know, he had stayed fit, because he's about to play a lot. And honestly, I think he is, you know, I think there's other teams that are probably interested in him, but I mean, he is playing for his professional NBA life right now, because if he plays really well these first 25 games, you know, then maybe the Grizzlies don't have to make these moves. Maybe they can stick around and be patient and look at him as a future piece. But if he doesn't play well, I mean, the Grizzlies are probably waiving him and looking after something, or making some trades where he might be the odd man out. So very important first 25 games for Kenny Lofton Jr.
All right, we've got one more thing to mention before our 10-game prediction, and then we'll be signing off. There was an article released on ESPN.com. It was by Baxter Holmes and Tim McMahon, and Tim McMahon is the sort of area reporter, the Southwest Division guy for ESPN. He's also on some of their flagship basketball podcasts. Has been around for a while. Baxter Holmes is always involved in more investigative journalism type stories, and they released a full account of everything that's happened with Ja Morant, honestly, from the time that he's drafted, that he was drafted till now, and where things sit. John, I'll get your take on it. I'll start by saying that I felt personally that this was more a ESPN's attempt to be the source material if we ever need to refer back to what happened in the Ja Morant saga, let's say like in 3 years, if someone was wondering how we got to wherever we are in 3 years, hopefully it's somewhere good. But I that's my sense, is that they just wanted something that was going to summarize everything. And of course, they're being a national outlet, I just felt like their editors were probably looking at all the different pieces flying around and were like, we just need to like bring it all together, consolidate it. The timing, of course, was interesting, but I also think from an editing perspective and running a website, you're probably gauging, you know, when is NBA interest going to start to increase? That's about the time that we need to do this. You know, there could have been maybe more conversations with the Grizzlies organization on like, hey, we have this story, what, you know, let's talk about and collaborate together on when we want to release it. That, I don't know about that one, but that's my take on it. Did you feel as if there was any sort of, you know, undue timing on it, or what was your overall take on the story?
I mean, one is it's nice because usually when Baxter Holmes comes to your town, it's not good. You know, I mean, the last like three or four exposés he's done, people have gotten fired. So in that sense, I think it's good they didn't find anything new to run, that it was more of, I just think, a summary with maybe a few added details here or there. And I, you know, I think the timing was a little weird, but in some ways I think they knew it would be a front page thing. It got a ton of clicks. I mean, it really did. You know, it is still amazing to me how big of a star Ja is, that like, even in the midst of football, college football, that an article releases on a Wednesday and he makes all the shows, all the even just normal national TV podcasts and other things talk about it. So I think there's a little bit of that before the season starts, get people kind of in the basketball mode, and also does give you the link. So, because I do think when he does come back, I don't think ESPN as a TV partner would want to be releasing a negative thing. And so, you know, it feels like now they've released the negative, it gives some time to now kind of do the positive. With that, you know, I mean, there was nothing really new. It didn't throw me much. You know, I think the team sources, some people talked about, oh, the team kind of talked some, you know, gave up some information. And so that maybe means there's some frustration between him and Ja. I don't really see that. Maybe. I think, you know, for all we know, the team sources are no longer with the team, but were there last year. For all we know, you know, it's people lower level that's all they could get. It seems like everything that I've heard and seen, it seems like Ja and the team are good. And so I'm not worried about that. And then my major frustration was there's a lot of anonymous quote sources, especially from local business owners who just kind of gave the boomer, the boomer Memphis takes as far as like complaining about crime or like complaining about dress, you know, or rap and stuff like that. And that I kind of roll my eyes at that stuff. That was sort of annoying. And I don't feel like speaks for a lot of Memphians or a lot of local business owners. But besides that, I don't think it was, you know, I don't think it was some huge story, but it did, you know, take over, I think, sort of the media for last week a little bit in Memphis. So
yeah, the last thing I'll say on this, and if you need to add any more, feel free. I think the thing that makes me most nervous about something like this is that Ja will start to see that everyone against him. And that certainly seems to be his impression right now. And I don't want him to incorrectly lump Memphis in with everyone being against him. And the, like you said, just the local business owners, any sort of, if he has any Memphis media members that maybe he's just not a fan of, and then therefore we'll just kind of say, Memphis is also against me, so it's just me and my crew against everyone. I think if you were to poll 10 Memphians who are Grizzlies fans, you know, 9 out of 10 would say that their Ja Morant fans still want what's best for him and really just want him to succeed and will be there cheering for him this season when he comes back. And that is the general sentiment. And so that's what I want him to at least know, that this city has him. Of course, he is on, a tightrope here, and he's got to walk it correctly. Or else I don't know how long Memphians will also be behind him. But for now, like, that's important. And you can't read too much into social media. I mean, he's really online. But I think it's also, we get sometimes too wrapped up in reading into that. But he's still going to be behind his family. Like, whatever your opinion is about T. Morant, whatever your opinion is about his crew, like, that's just kind of who he is at this point. It's kind of like, can you accept that as long as it leads to a pattern of behavior that's positive? And also, that's just the one thing that I want.
Yeah, I mean, and I agree. And I, you know, one other thing is just, I do think, like I said, Baxter Holmes tends to write negative exposés. Tim McMahon, no offense, you know, I don't think Tim's listening, but he's just a negative person. Like, he's a hater. Like, he is that personality. He rarely is like, oh, this was awesome. He's always down on everything. And he's, so in that sense, I think there's, you know, talking about T. Morant as a dad, I think there's a lot of criticism there. I just don't like it when it's just criticism. And you also don't put about the fact that, like, the story we know that he gave up professional sports so that he could raise his son and daughter. Like, there's a lot of good things too. It's a good and bad, not just all bad. And the article slanted towards the bad, but, and, you know, with being online, and nothing makes me fearful more than when middle-aged guy like me tries to decipher emojis on Twitter. But Ja did say, you know, he did talk about that he did make very a positive, you know, that the Grizzlies were a positive to him about getting through life and stuff like that. And I think obviously all the teammates have always backed him no matter what, even if they're maybe frustrated on the inside. And so I'm not worried about those sorts of things at all.
I'm just ready for the first highlight. Yes. In his first home game, and just to be in the crowd and hear what happens there. And I hope that is an important moment for him as well, right, in determining, you know, who's on his side.
Yes.
All right. Sure. Last thing for this episode, 10 game prediction. I'll read off the games and I'll let you go first.
Okay.
Home against the Pelicans, home against the Nuggets, at the Wizards, home against the Mavericks, at the Utah Jazz, at the Portland Trailblazers, another game at the Portland Trailblazers, and then the last three are home against the Heat, home against the Jazz, and then at the Los Angeles Clippers. John, your first 10 game prediction is?
My first game 10 game prediction is 6-4, but I'll tell you, pre-Steven Adams news and right after the last preseason game, I definitely would have gone 8-2, and, you know, which probably is, even just in general for an NBA team, very few teams start off 8-2. But so I still, because I think the schedule is very manageable, I honestly am tempted to even go 7-3, but I'm gonna go 6-4 because of the Adams news. And just there's some weird games, like at Wizards should be a win, but it's on a back to back. So who knows what that means? There's just a lot of stuff like that, but it is a very manageable schedule with who we're playing. It'll be interesting. I mean, I think very early on, we get sort of what's seen as a peer to us in the Pelicans and the Mavs. We also get the title, the NBA title champions in the Nuggets, get to kind of see what's going on there. So we get kind of a good test. But I loved what I saw of our last preseason game. It has me very confident. And one of the reasons why I'm not in total despair is because Adams did not play in that game. And I just saw that we moved the ball well. I felt like our offense was moving better than it has in years past, that people were touching the ball. I liked the amount of threes we were getting up and a lot of open shots. And I just thought we looked like a really good, well-coached team that passed the ball in shares. I thought Marcus Smart looked really good. So because of that, I'm still going 6-4. Think we're going to be above 500.
I have 5-5. I'm not quite as hopeful. The Adams injury has brought me down. I was going to say 6-4 before now. We have 5 at home, 5 on the road. The Wizards back to back. I still count that as a win. But the names that are now really important keys to these games are Jonas Valanciunas, Nikola Jokic, which he was going to be anyway, but Walker Kessler, Bam Adebayo, and Ivica Zubac. And so we're playing all of these guys who are your stereotypical five. Bam's a little bit more stretch for five. But I just, the three-game road trip also out at the Jazz, they have one of the best home court advantages. And then at the Blazers twice, the thing that makes me nervous is that it's really early in the season for them. Scoot Henderson's going to want to make an impression. They still have guys. Like, they're not just like a fully tanking right. team yet. The Wizards, to me, are like already in tank mode. So that's why I'm not as nervous about that game. There's just too much up in the... Oh, and by the way, we're not quite yet at that point. We will be 5 games in to where we can sign that replacement player if we really do need them.
Right.
If a little bit more front court depth. So if we're looking at... If this were our second block of 10-game predictions, I'd probably go 6-4 with the roster we have right now. But there's just like a couple of things that are making me nervous. So if we can get out of this 5-5... I'll be good.
Right.
And that's exactly what I'm expecting.
And I think, honestly, and I'm going to always be probably a little more positive, a little more hopeful. But it's always been 500 or maybe even a little bit better before Jaw comes back was always going to be a win. And so, and so I'm hoping we get a little over 500 these first 10, because, spoiler up to the next 10 is a little more challenging. And so hopefully these first 10, we can come out, start well. And, and put up at least be 500, 5-5. That's the hope. So,
well, we'll probably list this podcast as a Stephen and Adams emergency pod. But this was the first edition of the Weekend Update. We will be back with you next weekend. We have a Grizzlies prediction podcast that we recorded last week before all this news came out. It's set to release on Tuesday. We are still deciding whether or not we want to release that. We might, add some caveats in there, but there was a lot of assumptions made about the health of this team, and now this team is pretty different. And so we will keep you updated on that. Probably still release it with a few previews in there, but Grizzlies season starts on Wednesday night at home against the Pelicans. Going to be a division game. It's going to set the tone, and I want to see the FedEx Forum loud. I'm excited,
and we need to take advantage of it, because if we have injury issues, they have some major injury issues, and we need to take advantage. So.
Absolutely.
So well, come out. I'd love to see that be a sold out home crowd for the opener and super loud. Give it a good atmosphere. So
well, thanks again for joining us for Kraft. I'm Will. We will talk to you next week then.